How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is November 20th, 2012, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We are here to talk Raw is Titus O'Neil here on the show. Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
I thought Titus O'Neil was great.
He was pretty funny. He was really funny. Him and Lawler back and forth. Yeah. It was interesting to, you know. But yeah, he was good. Darren Young didn't say anything though.
He didn't say anything. Titus O'Neil, he's not like the best worker. Obviously, he's very green, but you could tell he's got something. And you put
he's got a good look. I mean, like, that's the one thing he's had from day one.
Yeah, but even the two guys together, when they do their millions of dollars dance, and they you could tell there's something there. But tonight,
they gave
him a live mic and let him go without a script, and he was great.
Yeah, he was good. He was good. He just got on a roll, and yeah.
So I thought that was awesome, but there was a lot of other stuff to talk about on the show, of course. And
it was an interesting show, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was a very interesting show, and there was some good wrestling. There was some boring wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
There was some good angles.
Some interesting angles.
Yeah.
John Cena's not hurt.
That's right. John Cena's not hurt. Apparently, the spot where he twisted his ankle was a planned spot.
Oh, yeah. That's obvious from the TV show that was a planned spot. The thing that I thought was that it was, because of what they did, was that it was a cover for a real injury. But, in fact, he's not injured at all.
That's right. It was not that he twisted his ankle and they turned it into a storyline. No. They booked their top babyface to be a klutz.
No, they wanted, the idea was that, their feeling was that he needs to be handicapped going into a match with Dolph Ziggler because no one's going to believe that one-on-one that Dolph Ziggler can beat him.
So well, I understand that, but they still booked him to be a clutch. The injury was he jumped out of the ring and tripped over his own feet.
I thought he did a hell of a job.
He did.
On being able to do, just the way that whole thing was, it was really good. Because those other segments, those are all pre-tapes. That's how I knew that, like, okay, come on, you know.
Yeah.
They don't do that stuff live. They do that stuff in the afternoon. So, and plus the whole thing was like just a storyline. I mean, it's the whole storyline of everything. But I thought that, okay, you know, maybe he's having knee surgery or something like that. And, you know, he tweeted that he's having an MRI and all that, you know, tomorrow morning. But he's going to wrestle no matter what, which tells you right now that he's not hurt. But, yeah, it's just a storyline because they want a weakness for Dolph Ziggler to go against when Dolph Ziggler goes against him. That's that.
That was quite a risk to book an angle where you have to pretend twist your ankle by kind of sort of twisting it.
Yeah, like I said, it was really well done.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they handled it was really good, too, because he did it in a way where you're going like, oh, wait a minute, he kind of limped when he was doing that running. But they never called attention to it. And then they came back to it later, like, oh, he's really, you know, he's really hurt, as opposed to, like, when he does it, them, like, overacting it. You know, like, they didn't even acknowledge it when he actually did it. And they came back a few minutes later and said, oh, when that happened. So it was almost, it was really well, the whole thing was really well done. I mean, in that sense, you know, as far as when they did that, I thought, oh, you know, went and screwed up his knee until they, you know, started doing all the storylines from it, and then it's like, okay, well, that's probably a cover. But in fact, it wasn't even a cover. It was just he's just not hurt.
Now, jumping forward, we're going to go over the whole show, start to finish. But I do have to talk about this. I thought I'll get the positive out of the way first. I thought the segment with AJ and Vicky, I thought both of them, their acting was actually extremely good per WWE standards. The problem was AJ walks into Vicky's office and she says, John's hurt. What are you going to do about it? And I was like, what do you expect her to do about it? People get hurt on the show every day, all the time. And the guy tripped. It wasn't even like somebody attacked him multiple times with a chair.
I know, yeah, like exactly. Somebody should have hit his knee with a tire iron and
it
made some sense as opposed to, like, I know, how are you going to suspend someone or fine someone because of the nature of how they did that angle?
Yeah, you're going to fine the ground?
Yeah.
And then she goes into Dolph and she's like, how dare you? And it was like, how dare you what? Run?
Yeah.
So I wasn't sold on that whole deal, but Oh, well, let's start the show. Ryback came out and, in fact, cut a promo.
Bad idea.
Yeah.
I mean, not bad idea that he cut a promo. I mean, in the sense that at some point he's going to have to talk. But my God, the way that they script that promo, that, you know, I mean, he is like this robot who was
programmed
trying to remember his lines and deliver them horribly. I mean, it's like he shouldn't be, you know, talking like in, you know, I don't know. It was like some writers got together and go, if they were writing a, you know, a Ryback the, you know, the Cowardly Lion or something like that, and scripting these like silly lines for him to say about, you know, around, we've got to have all these, you know, like references to food, you know, and it's just like, you know, nobody would talk like that, number one. Number two, he couldn't deliver it anyway. It was like, as he's talking, I'm going like, this is just so stupid. You know, I mean, you got to understand how to script a character. And I mean, it was like, it was the biggest, you know, miss in the sense of, you know, this intense character should not be like, you know, speaking with all these references to food just because his catchphrases feed me more. I was like, God, it's, you know, it was like, I was watching the pregame show on yesterday with, Scott Sanford and Renee Paquette, who's now Renee Young. And I mean, it was so horrible.
She Darren's sister?
What?
She Darren's sister?
Yeah, right. But it was so horrible in the sense that they were talking, both of them. I mean, like, you could tell that they're reading everything off a teleprompter, which is fine. In that situation, that's what people do. But the people who wrote for what they said, it's just like they wrote stuff that in a manner that no human being would ever talk. And they're out there trying to be conversational. Like, when you're trying to sell someone on a thing, like, you can just, like, talk and say, like, this is why you want to buy the pay-per-view. Or you could do what Joe Rogan did on Saturday, which is essentially cut a crazed pro wrestling promo right before the pay-per-view starts.
Yes.
But you know, which they couldn't get they couldn't go and do that because it's number one, it just wouldn't be in their character, and they probably would do it really lousy. But those are the two things that you do. Instead, they have them scripted by saying this conversational stuff where you're just listening to it and go, nobody talks like this. Nobody would ever talk like this. You know, they have to get like it's WWE speak. It's like like the King's English or something like that. You know, where you're, you know, they're trying to create this dialect, you know, which is not English that's spoken in the United States, or English that's spoken in England or Canada or anywhere, Australia or anywhere. It's just this like weird, you know, dialect. And when I'm watching them, I'm going like, this is selling nobody any pay-per-views, and they don't even realize this, because it's like you just listen to this and you just go like, you know, you're just you know, you're, it's just so freaking fake. And anyway, I mean, Ryback wasn't as bad as they were, but, you know, number one, because he didn't have to go out there for 30 minutes and talk like that. But it's like, I don't know. You know, you've got to talk in a way that when people are listening, they're going to go like, okay, they get into your character, as opposed to sitting there going like, nobody talks like this. And you're not, you know, you're just so freaking ineffective. So anyway, it wasn't that long. Every other word like was killing him more.
So he wanted the guys from last night to come out, Ambrose, Reigns, and Seth Rollins. Of course they didn't. And then Vicky came out and said that if you cause any chaos tonight, you will be fined or suspended. And she said, since you're hungry, I'm going to sign you to a match with Tensai. So they had a match. They trusted these guys on live television to do that finish. And he did, in fact, get Tensai up. Hit him with his finisher and pinned him, and it was all right, I guess.
I guess, you know, by the standard of, wow, this could be a train wreck, and it wasn't. It was all right, but wasn't that good.
We had Kofi Kingston and Wade Barrett. That was a pretty good match. Went a long time.
Yeah, it was a nice match. It was good.
Yeah, Kofi, babyface in peril, Wade Barrett, big mean heel. And a lot of moves, kicking out of this, kicking out of that. And finally, Barrett hit the bowl hammer elbow for the win. And There you go. I really like this match, actually.
Yeah, setting up the new program, you know, for the Intercontinental title, which should be good. I thought Barrett did a really good promo, you know, which is funny because it's probably scripted by the same people who scripted Ryback's promo. But at least they have him at least talking like a heel would talk, as opposed to, you know, or maybe he's just, you know, maybe he's just talking like his character would talk, but he, you know, and understands how to do it, but. You know, it was like he laid out his case that he eliminated Kofi in the match at Survivor Series. He'd beaten him before for the Intercontinental title. You know, he has wins over him, and Kofi's a joke as Intercontinental champion. He should be champion. And I'm listening, going like, dude, you deserve a championship match. So, you know, it's a non-title.
So
match.
So he probably won't get one.
And it's right now he's going to get one.
We had Paul Heyman backstage. He had a giant poster celebrating 365-day title run by CM Punk. Punk came out, and Paul said he's going to have a celebration for him later. Then Matt Stryker in his November mustache showed up, and he asked Punk about the guys, the NXT attack. Punk, of course, said he had nothing to do with it. And Paul reiterated, big party tonight! And he said everybody's invited, including Ryback, which is funny, because... Ryback actually did come out later, and Paul was not happy, nor was Punk.
But they had a party with no people.
Well, just because he sent out invitations doesn't mean anyone shows up. Welcome to every TNA pay-per-view in my house.
Yeah.
Caitlin and Oksana had a horrendous match.
Well, hey, look, on the Caitlin versus Oksana scale, it wasn't that bad.
On the Caitlin versus Oksana scale, who thought this match on live TV was a good idea?
Well, you know, they figured that they had to do something based on what they did last night. You know, that there's like a...
They can't do that on the taped show?
You could have done it on the taped show, but I'm sure they didn't think that way. They figured that, oh, you know. But no, the match wasn't a complete total screw-up, but it wasn't a good match at all.
WWE is on the soup. Wednesday, we got a video on the front page if you want to check that out as a preview. Brodus Clay and Antonio Cesaro... Cesaro beat him clean with his finish. It wasn't much to the match. I think this might be nearing the end for Brodus Clay.
I wonder, though, just because, I mean, it's the end of his, it's already, they've already, you know, they've already stopped his push a while ago. But, you know, it's weird that they would have essentially a job act, which is what he's become, and have to pay three people for it. But the ring entrance is still kind of over. So... And it's something like, as far as like something to open a house show, I mean, his ring entrance with the two girls is a great way to open a house show. So I can't see them like getting rid of him, but it's certainly a lot of expense for a job guy. It's weird. It's kind of weird, actually.
Well, maybe in the house shows he can beat a, I don't know, who's the geek of the week? Just some guy.
Slater, except Heath Slater's going to be beating him soon.
Actually, that's true. Alex Riley. Really,
and they elevated Heath Slater from the geek level now.
Just keep Alex Riley around, and the Funkasaurus can beat Alex Riley to open up all house shows. Everybody's happy.
Alex Riley's like got surgery on like a couple body parts.
That's right. We had Vicky backstage.
I want to make a mention because he passed over it.
Actually, no, the John Cena video.
Yes, the John Cena video.
That was a really nice video.
That mom was so good.
Yeah.
That mom who gave him the speech when he did his 300th, when he got his award for his 300th wish, the mom who I guess was the second of his 300, she was really good. I just wanted to make mention of that. And John was really good in that video.
Yes, he was.
I mean, they had the people that crowd, which probably, you know, no doubt half of them came to boo John Cena, or a third of them came to boo John Cena. And when that video was over, everybody clapped. For a freaking video, and I could see why. It was a really well done, you know. The production was good, of course. Those things always are, but you know, really, you know, I mean, even better. I mean, they do that stuff all the time, but this one was better than usual.
I know they show these videos all the time, but I should reiterate to everybody that this award was for 300 wishes granted, and that's the record. So when you look at the biggest movie stars in the world, the most famous people in music and television and all forms of entertainment, John Cena is the leader. He's granted more wishes than anybody ever. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is.
We had Vicky backstage. She had some guy and WWE's version, yes, of Claire Lynch. Who they actually named Whitney, believe it or not.
Yeah, Whitney Smith.
That's right. And there was
a waitress in Sacramento,
yep.
Theory.
Evidence, she said, of this scandal. She comes out to the ring with him, and the Claire Lynch girl says, I was working here at this this place, and John and AJ were there for dinner, and they were getting pretty close, getting awfully cuddly, discussing a lot more than just business. And then the fella, Doug, said that he saw the two of them in a parked car, and they were in there for over an hour. And he said he had some video footage. And Vicky said, if you don't want your children to see nudity, turn off the TV or cover their eyes right now. And, of course, before the video played, out came AJ. She was very upset, of course, even though she wasn't upset last night at the pay-per-view. So she's upset, she's yelling, blah, blah, blah. Out comes John Cena. Long story short, if you've been watching this this storyline for the past couple of weeks, they're building up a relationship. In fact, we talked a lot about this on the show last week, about building this relationship up here. Well, they already paid it off.
That was unreal.
John said, you want something to talk about? How about this? And he gave her a big kiss, and then she gave him a big kiss, and they're making out in the middle of the ring. And that's your payoff, everybody.
That was awkward. You know, you could tell, like John Cena, like, was just so much not wanting to kiss her. I mean, it was just so, And the other thing is, it's like, I mean, I was flabbergasted watching this, because it's like, the whole thing when it comes to this kind of a storyline is that you drag it out for ratings purposes, but you really don't want to get there. I mean, because once you get there, it's kind of like, then what do you do? You know, other than like what they did tonight with that angle, I guess. But it was like they rushed this thing, I don't know, six to nine weeks already. It's like the whole idea of people wanting them to get together and them not getting together and all this, it's like they already did.
Yep.
It's like, I mean, my God. If they wrote a television show, man, that show would be, you know, like a real television show. I think it'd be canceled in the first season.
That show would be canceled after two episodes. Maybe three.
Yeah.
Maybe three. Someday we'll probably find out, actually. So then they had Dolph come out, and apparently all this kissing made him very upset. So he attacked Cena. Cena fought back. Dolph bailed. Cena ran after him, tripped over his own feet, blew out his ankle or knee. They claimed MCL, perhaps injured, and off they went. So there you go. Now, my big question is, all right, they've kissed. So what? It did was make Vicky angry.
Yeah, but now, you know, well, it explained everything of, like, now they have a relationship, so now the way to get heat, you know, there's, you know, the way to get heat is what they did. You know, they, you know, he stuck up for her, and then they took out his knee, you know, the second time. Well, actually, just Dolph.
His own foot took out his knee.
Well, not the second time, though.
Second time, that is true.
The second time
was just a brawl where he aggravated an injury he caused to himself.
Yeah, but he was stomping on the knee a bunch of times, the injured knee, so it was a way to get heat there. The only thing is the stomping on the injured knee thing was almost identical to the chair to the knee that they just did last night. It's like, you know, which was on Big Show's knee. But it's like, again, it's like, you know, if you're doing an angle, which is fine. Either one of those angles is fine. But when you do two of them and they're the exact same one, it makes it virtually impossible for either of them to get over. So, and that's just elementary when you do the same thing to two different characters on the same show at the same time. So I don't know what they're thinking. You know, other than I'm sure what happened, you know, they didn't decide what they were going to do tonight when they decided last night, and that's the peril of it. It's like, well, we'll do this. And it's like, oh, we already did it. Well, too late now. We already did it.
Especially we had
the whole Big Show knee, you know, ended up playing like exactly zero to do with anything since Big Show came out and, you know, after all those chairs to the knee, and he was walking around and he was just fine tonight. You know,
I don't know about that. He was limping around. He limped to the back.
He was fine, though. I mean, it wasn't like he's injured or anything.
He wasn't in a giant wheelchair.
It wasn't even anything. I mean, it's like, it's not like, you know, he didn't come out and go, you know, you injured me, you know. He just did his promo, and, you know, they're going to have their rematch. That's all. He ain't going to be limping at the rematch. He ain't going to be limping at the house shows.
We had Randy Orton and Alberto Del Rio in a 2 out of 3 falls match. Why? Well, no good reason. We had DQ finish in the first when he wouldn't stop attacking Orton's arm, hitting it into the post. And then he got the armbar on for a submission in the second fall, so it was tied. And then in the third fall, Orton escaped the armbar, ducked out of the way of an enziguri, hit an RKO, got the pin. It's a pretty good match, but kind of slow paced there for a while. It was a Randy Orton match. And, I mean, they worked hard, though, and the finish is always good in Randy Orton matches.
I thought it was a nice match. You know, I mean, it told the story. His selling was good, especially in the third fall. I thought it was a good match.
We had Cena getting his leg wrapped, and AJ was very worried. We had the great Kali against Primo and Epico. Of course, Kali won. Hornswoggle was there. He had roses for Rosa. And she went to sniff them. It sprayed water all over her, which made her very upset. And I don't know what any of this has to do with anything, to be honest, except getting great Kali on television.
It distracted. I think that they're doing something. They want to do something with the great Kali and Hornswoggle.
And Natalya?
The Natalya thing may have been, I don't know. Did they do anything on SmackDown with Natalya?
They may have dropped that storyline.
Yeah, because they did it. Yeah, they may have dropped it already. Maybe not.
Paul wanted balloons for the celebration, and now that I think about it, did he have balloons? I don't remember any balloons.
No, he did not. There were no balloons.
Oh, that stagehand screwed.
Yeah.
Miz and David Otunga. First off, everyone, just imagine if you didn't see Raw, what you would think the reaction to this match would be. Correct. Nobody cared. In fact, there were chants of boring during this match.
Yeah.
This is awful, I believe they were chanting, as opposed to Miz is awesome. Match was lame. Miz made his comeback and won. And
Miz now, here's the other thing. Miz as a worker, as a babyface, freaking sucks. I mean, his left-handed, he's got to work. Those left-handed punches are the worst thing. He's just got to, like, drop them until he learns how to do them.
Yeah.
It was just like his, it's like, he really, you know, it's like, as a heel, you know, he's a fine worker. He's not great. He's by no means great, but he's certainly good enough. As a babyface, and maybe he'll get better with time, but it was the same thing when he was a babyface before, even, you know, and I mean, he works like a developmental babyface, I guess just because he hasn't been a babyface in so freaking long. And, yeah, I mean, you know, it's like he's a guy playing, he's playing pro wrestler, and his promos are like, you know, they're all designed to be like, I'm playing The Rock, you know, I'm trying to get everyone, and they will, you know, I mean, he'll get his Pavlov's reaction with this really, 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 it's nice and cute and all that, but it's annoying, it's kind of annoying too, but the work, he's, you know, and the other thing is, again, and you just turned, I mean, it's like the crowd, like, whatever. It's like, you know, to do an effective turn, generally speaking, the most effective turns are the ones where the crowd wants you to turn, and you slowly give them the hints you're going to, but you don't actually do it until, you know, long after the crowd's just screaming for it to happen, and then you finally do it, you know, but not so long, you know, not so long that they just gave up caring. I mean, this was the immediate turn thing. It was obviously that people weren't clamoring for it before he did it. He just did it. Didn't really do it very dramatically at all. And now he's a babyface, and it's like now he's a not over babyface. I mean, I think he will get a reaction, you know, for the Pavlovian stuff because he's got, you know, those things, you know, where he's, you know, again, going to get the people to do the really with him, and this is awesome will be an easy chant to get people to do. But, he's got a lot to work on. I mean, and granted, he's working with Otunga and all that, which isn't, not the easiest guy to have a match with. But still, he made it harder than it usually is. I mean, you know, most Otunga 6-minute matches are better than this one.
We had the Big Show Sheamus controversy. Our big argument. I thought Big Show was actually great in this.
He usually is.
He's great.
He's very good on promos.
Yes, he is. As a babyface and as a heel.
Yeah.
He, unlike The Miz, can play both roles perfectly.
Well, he understands. He understands his character.
Mm-hmm.
And Miz did as a heel, as far as understanding his character and what his character should do. You know, not being too cute as a heel. As a face, he's just got to learn what to do. You know, I mean, it's weird for a guy who's been around as long as he has. But again, you know, he was a face in developmental, but it never worked. And he was a face when he first came in, and it didn't work. And it's just because he's missing something there. But Show really understands how to do a promo. And I mean, no matter what, and he was very good here. Yeah. And just yelling over, just being like a real heel, and in a way, like WWE, the whole thing is that you do your, this is another thing that WWE that I think is like really, really fake. When you have the discussions, is okay, I talk a whole bunch. Then you talk a whole bunch. Then I talk a whole bunch. And then, like, you insult me and you insult me. But instead of, like, defending myself, I let you insult me so much. Usually this is babyface. Let the heel insult him so much without saying a word that he comes off like a complete pussy. And, you know, you lose faith in him. Or vice versa. And in this one, I mean, this guy as a heel just interrupted and was, you know, just, you know, wouldn't, you know, just was, he just was like, very whatever it was. You know, he was very heelish. So it was really good stuff.
Sheamus and Damian Sandow.
They were boring as hell.
They had a long match, way too long. And Sheamus bro-kicked him in one. And, yeah. It's not
it was
the...
too long. For their thing on this is one of their mentalities seems to be, like, with a three-hour show that you do a bunch of long matches. And I think if you do the long matches early... Or if it's the last match, the very last match of the show, and you do the long match, that can work too, because people are, you know, mentally the people in that last match, they know to tune in at 11 type of a thing. But when you do, I think that long match, unless it's like if it's a real good match, it's one thing. But when it's Sheamus and Damian Sandow, who have had hits and misses, because like when they start, it's like I think I've seen a bunch of long matches with these two. And one of them was really pretty good. In fact, it was really almost a turning point match for Damian Sandow. Whatever it was, about a month ago or so. And some of the other ones weren't quite as good. But I thought, like, as the point in the show, when they started doing the real slow stuff, it's like, okay, they're doing it's very obvious they're doing a very long match. And it really wasn't, like, it felt to me watching it like it was a 30-minute match. It was really only a 15-minute match. Which is more a credit to how the match dragged, as opposed to, you know, I think that when you do like the long match late, but it's not the last match, by that point in the show, people, it's the third hour of the show, and you're going to lose viewers anyway. And I think that I just think this match is going to probably lose a lot of viewers.
We had the deal where AJ stormed into the men's locker room, yelled at Dolph for...
Well, first she was in there with Vicky and Tamina, and they did the whole...
what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, and they shot Tamina to look like she was like just a giant. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think they must have put her in some heels or something like that.
On a box.
She just towered over Vicky and even more over, you know, over AJ and, you know, did the whole thing of like they're going to feud, and AJ's feuding with this giant Amazon woman. It was just effective. I thought that was really, really well done. You know, you looked at that visually and it kind of, you know, it was more than just a typical Divas match. It looked like AJ's going to fight this freaking monster. And you know, again, because the whole thing's to get AJ over. And, made Tamina pretty effective and all. And Vicky's there laughing because she's got the big bodyguard woman with her. There's one point Vicky started laughing, and she's doing that cackling laugh, and I was just thinking, like, why is she laughing? It's like nobody said anything. I mean, did I miss something? She just started laughing out of nowhere.
She just does that. I don't know what she was laughing about. Something about, I don't even know. She asked what
Vicky was... it wasn't like anything where...
What she said was, are you trying to deny that you guys were playing tonsil hockey, I believe she said, and this made her laugh uproariously.
But why?
Dave, I haven't been able to figure out why any of this storyline has made any sense so far. I don't know why she is happy.
I didn't care, but now I care because now it's just like, it's like...
Yeah, why is she so happy that these people are kissing each other? What does this have to do with anything?
I don't know.
Well, now infuriated as well.
Maybe she's now disqualified herself for life from being general manager. But that doesn't make any sense because Vicky went and got married.
That's right. None of this has ever been acknowledged on television as to why, what everyone's motivation is. It's funny because now you're annoyed by it and I'm over it.
I thought the motivation was to slowly build up the idea of John Cena and AJ kissing.
Well, that's the motivation of like the storyline. But I'm talking the motivation of the characters. I still have never understood for a moment.
You mean like why Vicky's doing all this?
Exactly.
The one thing is like, and AJ even said this. He goes, Vicky, why don't you just fire me? And it's like she doesn't do it. It's like if she hates her, and she's established that this is like her dream job, and she'll do anything to keep her job. So the thing to get to her, you know, is to fire her. You know, which of course should be, and Vicky won't do it. And it's like she had the right to. You know, she never had to hire her back, especially when AJ was so rude and all that when in the interviewing process when she gave her that interview to have a job. So it's kind of like, I don't know. What else?
Kind of like it doesn't make any sense.
Well, doesn't? I mean, I know that they're in their mind the way they write it doesn't have to make sense, which is a flaw, I guess. But it's not even. But it's like now it actually makes like no. It makes like less sense now than ever before.
Yeah. So she attacked Dolph. Cena ran in, big brawl. Went through a bathroom stall. John's knee was kicked. Dudes arrived. AJ devastated, even though it was all her fault.
Yeah. Yeah, Dolph told her off in front of all the guys, basically said that she was,
dime a dozen.
I guess the whole thing with the storyline is that they're gonna portray her as this girl, you know, from, that from a poor family who lived in her car and came from these, you know, to be very, very sympathetic character, and they kind of teased it here, where they're going with the angle, at least where they're going today with the angle. Every time I was kind of told, like, where the whole thing's going, and, as far as that aspect goes, and, which doesn't mean anything. I mean, just, like, they actually have a lineup for the pay, just as an example. They have a lineup for the pay-per-view, and I was checking the lineup with somebody there, and it goes, is this lineup that I got, you know, is accurate? And it's like, well, it is right now, but it's changed, you know, four times today, and by the time, you know, you go to press, it'll probably change again. So it's like, but right now it is, yeah. So there you go.
We had Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara against Daniel Bryan and Kane with the primetime players on commentary. They made the match.
You know what was so awesome is Titus, I'm sure not know. I mean, you know, the whole thing was just like Jerry Lawler made mention about like Titus combs his hair with a wash rag because Titus has no hair, and then Titus just went off on Lawler being old school using the term wash rag, and then brought up he just said pay window because that was Dusty's old term,
yes,
you know, years and years ago, and kept just focusing on pay window, and then he just goes and he did a bunch of heart jokes with Lawler, which you. If it was in any other situation, you know, you could almost go like, man, that was in bad taste. But it really, it was just so, just the way it was done, it was just, like, funny. And Lawler was playing along with it anyway. You know, it's like, you know, your heart's going to stop. And they were making fun of the fact that his heart stopped when they were wrestling before. And but not in a way like last week. But the one line that I thought was just so funny was when, and nobody's going to get that, and I don't think Titus even knew what he was saying. I'm sure he didn't. You know, he just goes, you know, you probably have, like, your money buried in a mattress, and I just kept thinking, like...
He does!
It's actually
in a jukebox.
It's in a jukebox.
Yes.
I was just thinking, like, when he got robbed that one week, because he had all this cash in his jukebox, hidden in his jukebox, that apparently he apparently dated some woman. You know, it's an old story, but he dated some woman, and you know, I guess to show off, you know, that he's got all this cash hidden in his jukebox, you know, to show whatever, you know. So then she gets like this rogue cop, you know, like an actual police officer, and they were going to rob his house on a Monday night, knowing in fact that, you know, it's Monday night and he's going to be there. It was a big news story when it happened. And I know that like a lot of people in wrestling, I mean, they freaked out over this one because it was like Monday night. I mean, it was like everyone in the company, it was just going like, God damn. I mean, like everyone in town knows on Monday night, we're never home. I mean, not the ones that had families, but the ones who were single and had a home and all that. And it's like, you know, God damn, you know? So anyway, but, you know, they ended up catching the guy and catching the woman and all that later on. But
I like how this was a sign of brilliance on the part of the criminal that Lawler's not home Mondays.
Well, I mean, it was a really well planned out thing. I mean, it was like four guys. I forget the whole situation. But it was a girl, you know, that he'd known in some form. I don't know if she was a stripper or what, but I think she was. But you know, this officer. So, you know, I mean, I guess he knew how to break and enter, being that he was a police officer or something. I don't know. But anyway, but the point is that, like, he's going, like, you know, you have your money buried in a mattress, and I'm just thinking, like, he didn't even know how funny he is, because the guy does.
It'd be even funnier if Lawler would have acknowledged the jukebox, since they're talking about old-timey stuff.
Well, I don't know that Lawler really wants that, you know, that publicized. But Lawler's just cracked. That was one of the things that made this, was Lawler and Titus O'Neil were just cracking each other up. You know, and Lawler just like laughed, you know, trying to, you know, he was just laughing through the whole thing with all the heart jokes, and Titus was laughing at himself. And was like, the thing was is that like, you know, Titus was good, but by the time this thing was over, he was like complete babyface. He was just some dude that was like, you know, at a party with you, and somehow, you know, like it just gets really funny, and he's just telling these jokes, and all of a sudden you're laughing at everything he says. And it's like, he's no heel. This guy's a freaking babyface.
Yeah.
But I don't know that, like, you know, next week on TV when they script him his lines and he starts, you know, I don't know that he'll be this, he'll never be this good again, probably.
Well, apparently Vince loved him on commentary, so hopefully he'll just throw him out there every week now.
Yeah, but we'll see. Maybe he can duplicate it and he's got a character, or maybe it was a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Because it was a bunch
of, or there's going to be wash rags on WWE.com tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. He took the ball, you know, I mean, just reacted. I mean, that was like something really, really good. I mean, what, and like, again, it was, none of it was scripted. So there you go.
We had the CM Punk 1 year celebration.
What happened in the frickin' match? Ray and Sin Cara wrestled Kane and Daniel Bryan, and then the Primetime Players basically interfered and attacked, and it was a no contest. And it appears they're building to a three-way program for the tag team championship with these three teams.
All righty. So we had the one-year celebration. Paul's out there, and he's got a list of the longest reigns in history, including, in fact, number one, Bruno Sammartino.
Number one and, I think, number four.
I think one and four, yeah.
Yeah, the other interesting one was, it's no biggie, but the Backlund thing, it's like, I guess the Inoki match never happened.
That's right.
Because they did the whole reign as if it was
uninterrupted.
Uninterrupted, as opposed to two different long reigns, you know. So anyway, that's...
Well, let's find out. You talk about this segment. I'm going to go to WWE.com and look at their official...
No, they've already for years had the Inoki match, and then they eliminated it from history.
It has been eliminated.
Oh, yeah, they eliminated it years ago from their history.
Then of course it's not mentioned in that thing.
Yeah, so
anyway, they do the celebration here, and... as everybody is well aware, by the way, Punk said that on July 25th, 2018, he would surpass Bruno as the longest reigning.
And they mentioned that, I guess they looked on their map, on the calendar, and found out that it was on a Wednesday, and he mentioned it was like the 350th or whatever episode of Main Event on a Wednesday, and that will be the night he breaks Bruno's record.
At this point now, they should just go for it. No. So they did the deal, and of course, out came Ryback, and Ambrose, Rollins, Reigns cut him off, And finally, they picked him up and they powerbombed him through the table. So again, I'm thinking it's going to be Ryback against these three men in a tables match at TLC.
Right now, the plan's Ryback and Punk for TLC.
In a tables match?
I do not know if it's a tables match. I don't. I think it would be either. Because they generally speaking, what you're going to do is you're going to have four matches. You're going to have the tables match, the ladders match, the chairs match, and then the TLC. And the only one that's definite is the chairs match, which is Sheamus and Big Show. And I shouldn't even say definite, but that's the one where, you know, that they've got. And then the other stuff is to be determined. I mean, it really is that they don't know which one's what. So,
well, give us the current lineup for this pay-per-view.
It actually probably could be a tables match, because if you think about it, you know, if Punk is going to win, and God knows, look, if Ryback was going to win, he should have won 2 months ago. There's absolutely, Ryback has no business winning this time in December in this one. I mean, so the way to beat Ryback, I mean, you can beat him in a ladder match. So they could do a ladder match or a TLC match where the whole thing is you climb the ladder to win. So he could do that. But the tables match is the easiest one, because I don't know that you want Ryback in a ladder match. I think that it's like, because then he's got to do all those, it's either going to be a really shitty ladder match based on, you know, what people expect from a ladder match. And I just would never want to put that guy in that kind of a match. But the tables match is the easy one, and, you know, there could be the thing where, you know, he just goes through the table and loses, and, you know, it's not being pinned and it's not submitting and it's not having to take big stunt bumps. So, that's probably the best idea. I would not have done this. I would have moved him in with those guys. Maybe a thing where he has to go and, wrestle one after the other, all three of them, and, you know, unfortunately, that doesn't do much for them when it's 3-on-1. But I would have moved him away. Just the point is, for the pay-per-view, I would have moved him away from Punk so they don't have to come up with another fluke finish why he doesn't get the job done. Because at that point, it's like it really starts to hurt him to lose again. And he doesn't need to get a shot right now anyway. When the money program is The Rock in January. So to me, I would just like move him away and then move him back, you know, whenever the time is right, you know, in a couple of months and do that. But, and maybe they will, you know, but I would have put him, you know, in some form against those guys, you know, maybe. The problem is that the best way for those guys to not be so, you know, 1-on-3-ish and then coming off like, you know, immediately putting them in a situation where they can't get over, because, you know, if you're 3-on-1 in a match, and then, you know, he's going to beat two of them and probably lose to the third guy, it's kind of bad for those two guys right off the bat. But you can't really put him in a trios match with two partners. So but that's better for the guys. If the guys are in there and they do a trios match with two partners, and then those guys beat one of the partners, you know, you can do it that way and then, you know, come back with more stuff. But, the point is that that's not where they're going anyway, although I thought that that's where they should go, just to keep, because I don't feel the need to do a Punk Ryback right now and just, you know, again, you know, beat Ryback, you know, have Ryback fail to win the championship a third time. I just, not good for his character right now. He's flat, you know, between that and that promo, he's going to flatten out even more.
Matt Hardy video on the front page right now. He explains that he has a head injury, but not a concussion.
He actually didn't say he doesn't have a concussion. He says he has no long-term effects of a concussion. Which,
how do you know that after a day?
After 2 days, exactly. After 2 days, how do we know what the long-term effects are? So I listened to it, and it's like he may have tried to say that, but I mean, what he said was, "I have no long-term effects of a concussion." And I was just thinking, like, long-term effects. I mean, how would anyone know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
He did note. He blamed Luke Hawks, called him reckless.
Well, that's storyline.
So
maybe it's true too. But
it's either true or they're going to have a match or both.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they were going to anyway. I mean, you know, that was the whole thing to build to. So, they're working storyline there, and they should, as far as like, you know, you know, use it to build a match, because God knows, I mean, they need something to build. You know, they're in a tough, that Extreme Rising group. I mean, here's the situation. I mean, they drew very well in Pittsburgh. They did 1,200 people, which, you know, by modern standards for an indie show, it's pretty damn great. But but because of the cost of bringing all those different guys in, it was like a break even show. It wasn't like a big profitable show or anything. They didn't lose money at all on the show, so that's good. But it was also a nostalgia show, and the nostalgia show is not going to have a lot of legs, and they get that. You know, I mean, and you know, from day one, they've understood. You know, they've had a battle plan, that group, and it was not to be a traveling ECW revival show. It was to start as an ECW revival show and then use Luke Hawks and, you know, whoever else. You know, basically use the guys in ECW, the Stevie Richards guy, type of guys, that can still go, that, you know, they can still, you know, Guido and whoever, and use them. And then use, you know, Shane will probably always be a star just because, you know, it's Shane's group, essentially. And then use like the Sandmans and the Ravens and, you know, those kind of guys on the first couple of shows, to, you know, kind of be the familiar faces and draw, you know, and give it the ECW vibe and eventually phase those guys out. And Paul, actually, when ECW started, the ECW brand in WWE started in 2006, he had the exact same mentality where you bring in all the old ECW guys, and the ones who can still go, you keep, and the ones who can't go, you know, you don't use that much. And then you have a whole bunch of new guys, you know, like, you know, Mike Knox was supposed to be them. The Basham brothers were supposed to be them, you know, that are good young wrestlers, and you push them and that's how you revive it. And, you know, it didn't work, you know, not to say that in 2006, I mean, perhaps it could, and it doesn't really matter anyway, because, you know, it was Vince's thing, and it was, you know, Vince's ECW and, you know, couldn't work anyway. Even if that mentality that Paul had on that at the time, you know, whether it could have ever worked or not, I don't know. Because again, you're trying to recapture something from another era. But I mean, the whole thing here is they're trying to do this with no television, and that's really going to be difficult, you know, to get these, you know, Luke Hawks over as a top heel with no television. And the idea is like, you know, he does this with Matt Hardy, and you know, Matt Hardy's a star, and then you have an angle, and then by doing the angle, you elevate Luke Hawks into being a star. But how you're going to make Luke Hawks into a ticket seller as a main eventer with no television? That's and the reluctance of the crowds to accept, like, you know, on these shows, they've got a crowd that is coming to see the old ECW guys, and when they put on the young guys, but the guys that were not ECW originals. When they put them out, or a guy like Homicide, who I guess, you know, was got a little bit of a buzz. Although I don't even think that, from what I heard, he wasn't really all that over anyway at the show. But when they use those guys that they want to push, you know, the crowd is not there to see them, and so it's going to be a real struggle. But that's where they're at. But you know, I mean, that's what the whole thing is again. Well, I mean, Luke Hawks is the guy, for whatever reason, you know, that they have chosen. You know, from, you know, to work with Shane and to work with Matt Hardy and to be the young catalyst guy on top. And so obviously, you know, the idea was to shove Matt Hardy off the ropes and start a program with him anyway. And this happened. And he actually got hurt and things like that. And so, yeah, of course you want to use it. And they're going, you know, they're using Twitter and they're using everything, you know, available to them to go for it. It's just a struggle. I mean, it's like, you know, there's no other alternative than to do it, but boy, it's going to be tough. That's all.
Let's do a couple of the questions here before we wrap it up. What are the chances UFC ever runs a show at the LA Coliseum and draws 100,000 people?
None. If they're going to run, if UFC is going to run, you know, it's going to be a cowboy stadium. They're going to want the modern facility or the Toronto. They're not going to go to an old L.A. Coliseum. It's just not going to happen.
This person says, listening to the Observer Hall of Fame show, Regarding Carlos Colon, why did WWF bring him in for the 93 Royal Rumble in Sacramento? And in the commentary, any reason why Gorilla Monsoon called him a youngster when he got in the match?
They brought him in because in the old days for the Rumble, they would bring in guys. You know, they had 30 spots, and they would bring in international stars. They brought in Tenryu, they brought in Koji Kitao, Carlos Colon, Dory Funk Jr. one year, I think, got brought in. Jimmy Snuka and Roddy Piper and all them. You know, you kind of do. In fact, that's one of the things that they do is the surprise guy. But the problem is now with the surprise guy, it's always the Jim Duggan, Sergeant Slaughter guy that the guy that they have in the Legends contract I guess it worked with Booker T and Kevin Nash when they were the surprise guys. But with Carlos, you know, it's just one of those things that they would do because it's 30 spots and, you know, do that. But as far as Gorilla calling him a young guy, the rule of thumb for years and years and years and years is that when a baby face shows up the first time on your television, you call him a great young star. Even when they're not young, you call him a great young star because he's a baby face. And so Gorilla was just channeling, Gorilla was just saying what you were taught to do by the old mentality. I mean, I remember when you would see a guy, in their 40s, that was a baby face come into a territory and they would call him the great young star. And it's like, he's in his frickin' 40s. And Carlos was in his 40s then. But that's just how wrestling was, So that's the answer.
This question, I can actually answer this. Dana said he would never bring UFC back to Salt Lake City because of not selling tickets the first time around. Does he realize the event was on a Sunday? Actually, it wasn't. It was on a Wednesday. So that had nothing to do with it.
No, it was on a Sunday.
It was a Wednesday. It was August 1st. Scheduled for August 1st. That was Wednesday.
No, the first UFC show in Salt Lake City was scheduled for a Sunday. I mean, I remember this very clearly because they didn't sell any tickets, and I remember people ahead of time going like, there was no chance. I mean, the day the date was announced, they said that, I remember people saying, it's Salt Lake City, you can't draw. And the thing is that they do have sports events in Salt Lake City that do draw on a Sunday, but in fact, the people who said that ahead of time were right. They sold no tickets, and they moved the show to San Diego.
Actually, it was moved twice. This was August 1st, 2010. It was supposed to take place in Salt Lake City. They moved it to San Diego.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I know. I remember when that whole deal went down. And they didn't sell tickets that well in San Diego either, but it was better than Salt Lake City. But, yeah, no, it convinced Dana. And I mean, they sold so poorly, and this was at a time when they would go into a new market and sell the new markets out, immediately. It wasn't a strong card either, which probably had some, a little bit to do with it. But the sales were so bad that they didn't want to go back, which is funny because the sales being so bad, I mean, there have been some shows of late that the last San Jose, although I don't know if how quick they're going to rush back to San Jose either. The last time the UFC was in San Jose, I think they did even, they had to have done even worse.
So whose idea was it to run a show in Salt Lake City on a Sunday, since that's now been hammered out?
It was the day that the TV was booked. And they were looking for a city, and that was the city they chose since they'd never been there before. And Salt Lake City had drawn in the past for MMA, although it was years earlier. And so they just figured it was time to go to that market. And it was a miscalculation on the date. But you know what? I mean, it's like, I know the date is bad in Salt Lake City, but like I said, when people were telling me this, other people were saying, it's like it is in a sense for secondary stuff. You know what I mean? The whole thing of the bad date and all that. It's like if you have the right attraction, unless you're going against the Super Bowl, which no matter what, that's a bad date. If you have the attraction, I've been to UFC shows. And I mean, I remember the one, which was the George St. Pierre and Matt Hughes and Chuck Liddell and Vanderlei Silva double main event. That show, and it was in Vegas. But the point is, it went against the biggest football game, as far as regular season football game, of probably the last 20 years. And I remember going people going this game was so big that you know, they were going to get killed on pay-per-view. And in fact, they did great on pay-per-view that night. If you have the attraction, you know, you people are going to come. And I think that, like, again...
I know this is not...
I mean, but the point is, there are sports events that run on Sundays in Salt Lake City that sell out all the time. But the UFC was not big enough, and it was not a good enough card. And the fact that it was on a Sunday, it absolutely hurt the advance for sure. But it was also a weak card, and that was part of it too.
Yeah, because I know that I went to at the end of September. I went to seminars in Idaho Falls, and I talked to people there, and there were a lot of people that showed up Saturday from Utah, and none of the Utah people showed up again on Sunday. So
yeah, I mean, you know, it's definitely tough, but if you have the right attraction, but if they went in there, you know, again, they got the Utah Jazz, and the Utah Jazz does play home games on Sundays. I mean, they may avoid it as much as possible, but I know they do, and it's not like they don't draw. Because I remember that was the big argument when that happened, when they canceled and everything like that. It's like, you just can't draw there on a Sunday, and then somebody else brought up and goes, you know, like, there's sports events here on Sundays all the time that draw. It's just this one didn't.
All right, everybody, we're going to wrap it up for today. On Wednesday, Bruce Mitchell, Pro Wrestling Torch, is going to be on the show, and he is going to be talking the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. So if you liked the Larry Matisic show last week, part two is this week. It's going to be a good time. The Observer Hall of Fame issue obviously still up on the site right now. And new observers, new figure fours, new radio shows. List goes on and on. So check it out, and we'll talk to you again after a while.